Like, flip flop, nim nam, and dip dop. You know what I'm talking about? From that one, Zip Thorp, Noop Noop, Bebo, Wim Wham, Zip Zap.
Welcome, Applauders, to this month's podcast. I'm Lydia Malcolm.
I'm Jen McQuaid.
I'm Naomi McQuaid. And you know what movie we're about to do? Because you clicked on the thing.
Oh, my goodness.
This is the best opening that you could do for this movie.
Applauders. Okay, wait.
Do, 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 do.
Okay, so. Applauders, Santa Claus versus the Martians from 1964.
Correction, it's Santa Claus conquers the Martians because he does conquer them with joy and with toys and with laughter and cheer.
You're not wrong, but this ain't right. Applauders, we started recording 2 years ago, and this is our 20th episode, 1 millionth part, right? And it's a nice round number. It feels really good. And so a month or two ago when we were kind of plotting out what we would do next, we try not to plan too far because we like to be a little off the cuff. My brother suggested for the 1,000th time the movie he would most like us to review, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. And I've seen it a handful of times over the years, peripherally a lot. But I was like, brah, if we do your movie, you have to guest star on my podcast. And he was like, okay. So I know that we're just getting into it now and you have a few weeks ahead of you to absorb all of this, but I hope you guys stick around to the end because our special interview with Abraham, I don't want to put too much weight on it, but it's going to be immaculate. I don't know if you're excited. I'm like super excited to get Abraham's thoughts on this film.
I'm super excited.
Yeah.
We're all excited.
This movie did something to my brain, y'all.
Did you? I mean, like when you kind of like were like, yeah, sure, let's do whatever Abe suggested. Did you have any idea what you were going to get into?
Nah.
I've known for several years because Abraham loves this film and he loves Christmas. It's one of his compulsions, right? So like, it's been there. Like, it's sat in the back of my mind for decades now. And I never thought that I'd have a platform to talk about it or that it would at any point be necessary.
I will say this is a good compulsion to have, loving Christmas. And this movie is essentially harmless. I don't think it does anything to, you know, people outside of maybe like causing moments of just sort of like, huh? Or what? Or nah, nah, nah.
It's just a pile of reaction shots from you is what you're telling me?
Pretty much.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. I think that it's a product of its time.
Agreed.
And that's okay. I mean, we try to meet a lot of stuff where it's originated from. We're not, I mean, we certainly bring our modern perspective to the film's review, but like we have to keep in mind what it was in its conception. So like 1964 is well before any of us. You would have to agree.
It's even well before our second oldest now episode, which is Night of the Living Dead. That came out 4 years after this film.
And I think it largely influenced that film. You guys, it's December. I hope you're feeling the last month of 2020 and that you're looking forward to your festivities in a socially distant sort of way. But like, come with us on this journey because Abraham led us here. And we are going to drink from the trough that is Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. It was a book, but it might have been called Santa Claus versus the Aliens. Or the Martians versus the Martians.
Aliens versus the Aliens.
Yeah, and that was like a almost a Seussian feud between two different colored, like red and green aliens. But somehow they muted that down into the film that lays before us.
Why convolute the plot more than it needs to be convoluted, right? Because there's so much that goes on in this plot.
There's so much non sequitur to this plot. Like, they're like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then we never reference that again.
Oh, that's true. They don't. Like, one of my favorite parts, they never actually... Oh, never mind. I'm skipping ahead. Sorry about that.
Well, we're going to do that a lot in this, because why? What? What yeah. happened? What happened to Trog this whole time? Like, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
So, do we have some Sean facts we'd like to drop before we, like, jump in?
Yeah, I have a few Sean facts. Sean mentioned that he couldn't find any budget or earnings on this film, but Naomi, you said that you were able to find that on IMDb.
It was estimated on IMDb.
To be $200,000 for the time. Did you find out how much that would be worth now?
Yes, because the kind of person I am now has an inflation calculator bookmarked on her phone, and it would have, in today's age, it would cost $1,600,000 to create. And I think we should crowdsource remaking this whole film.
Top three budget films of this year are Mary Poppins, My Fair Lady, which won the Best Picture, and Goldfinger.
Okay, so I've heard of all three of those.
Mm-hmm.
This film also marks the first documented appearance of Mrs. Claus in a motion picture, coming 3 weeks before the television special Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which also featured Mrs. Claus.
Man, it predates Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah, and there are a couple of theatrical production notes on here as well. It was such a bad film that there were several theaters that picked it up and rewrote it for the stage. Because even though it was bad, people sometimes love a really bad movie. So you could also find this at the Factory Theater in Chicago, adapted by and directed by Sean Abley. And in 2006, there was a second one from the Maverick Theater in Fullerton, California. And this one was adapted by Brian Newell and Nick McGee. And that one was such a comedic success that it's continued on from 2006 onto probably not this year, but many years before that.
I mean, hands up, you would pay full theater ticket price to see this on stage, right? No?
Okay, so I'm glad to hear that it has been remade several times, because I was thinking we could remake this.
Yeah.
And I'm glad other people had that same idea. It means that I wasn't the only one who looked at this and saw, there's some potential here. It's just like about 10% potential.
10% out of a total of 100%?
Look, we're going to go over it when we get into my notes.
Okay. Sorry. All right. I know I'm super down.
But I would want to know what the plot to those stage adaptations are. Is it just, you know, Martians coming and kidnapping Santa Claus and then he conquers them with joy and laughter?
There's so many things to debate about the plot of this film.
Right.
So, like, we're going to have to, like, launch into it to get there, because either-wise, which is a new word, either-wise, we're never going to get through it all.
Right.
All 121 minutes of it.
Yeah.
So, strap in, kids. We're about to launch.
And speaking of kids, that's exactly where we come. Oh, no, actually, we don't come in there. Well, kind. Sorry. So, there's an opening scene. It's an opening credit scene.
Yes. And when it came on, Jen says, they used to call that animation. Except it's like a still shot of like a characterized Santa just pushing the title cards out of the way left and right.
As a song is played.
Oh, the song, you guys. We haven't had like a theme song in a while, mm-hmm. I don't feel.
I feel like the last time there was a theme song specifically to a movie was Earth Girls Are Easy.
Right, that's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So the song is called Hooray for Santa Claus.
I was wrong about that. Little Shop of Horrors also had one.
Was that after? Oh, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
We did a little bit of Brave Little Toaster singing as well.
I mean, no, here's the thing. We sing along to a lot of stuff.
Right.
But in terms of like having a theme song that's used repeatedly throughout the film, this is like one of the few times it's happened. And certainly on Earth Girls Are Easy, written by that one chick. Was it Debbie Gibson? I don't remember.
Something like that, yeah.
Probably not. You can reference that episode. It's hilarious.
Shock Talk.
Yeah, Shock Talk fixes. But the song, you guys, they use it throughout the film, and I didn't notice that at all. I only knew that they started with it and they ended with it. But then Jen and Lydia went off and they were like, no, no, it's through the entire thing. And it sounds like game show music to me. It's like dun 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 dun. Except it's hooray for Santa Claus.
S-A-N-T-A-C-L-A-U-S. Hooray for Santa Claus.
The worst. Just garbage music. It's written by a guy named Roy and another guy whose name I didn't write down.
It took two guys to write this song.
It did. And then it was sung by a children's chorus who all sound like they've been handed like that, whatever they call that go-go juice they used to give to that little girl on the modeling show that I never actually really got into watching, where they're just like, it's pixie sticks and Mountain Dew. They gave him a whole bunch of that. He could fit down any chimney. Hooray for Santa Claus.
I'm picking up the lyrics right now.
No. I wanted to rewrite the song with like funny lyrics, but it just hurt so bad to sing along with it so many times. Oh, I will say that this gave me, okay, so in sixth grade, I was in the, okay, it was, they had two performances and it was a split cast, but we did Frosty the Snowman and I was the bad guy. Because, and you wouldn't have known this back in sixth grade, but I was very quiet. I didn't emote a lot. Not until seventh grade did I come out of my shell. They were like, yeah, no, sure. You should be like the bad guy who's trying to monetize Frosty the Snowman. That was the plot. So like, I remember being like, oh, little girl, I'm going to make you a star. The whole wide world is going to know who you are. And you'll be famous if you know what I mean. You'll have more money than you've ever seen. Na, 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 na. I'm going to make you a star.
That sounds better than this song. This song that has lyrics like, he's fat and round, but jumping Jiminy, he can climb down any chimney.
That is a shoehorned rhyme if I've ever heard one.
Or hang up that mistletoe, soon you'll hear ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, okay, that is just a threat. That's just, I mean, like, if you, okay, so you're like, this is a delightful little kissy, kissy decoration, and you're hanging it up over your door, and you're like, I hope somebody kisses me under this mistletoe later. And then all of a sudden you hear, ho, ho, ho.
Or it's like they're making that Ernest Saves Christmas movie, which is Santa's.
Are you sure it's not Ernest Christmas? Stupid.
Ernest does save Christmas.
I'm just giving myself crap because that's the comment that launched Sean Fax, is me saying that it was Ernest Saves Halloween, but it's Ernest Scared Stupid.
It's Ernest Conquers Christmas.
Ernest versus Christmas. I love you, Sean.
Folks, the war on Christmas is going on, and it's been going on for quite some time. And it all started with Ernest.
You know what I mean, Vern?
There was a fake movie in there called Christmas Slay. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah.
What?
The guy that is the presumed, or it's the
elect.
Electorate.
The elect.
It's Santa Elect is an actor. And Santa is going to give him the new role as Santa. And before that, he was starring in a movie called Christmas Slay. And it was a horror movie.
I would watch that.
Totally.
Okay. So we've just... Oh, wait. Did you have something that you were going to share?
Oh, I certainly do. The opening credits, which is what we were just talking about with the theme song. The title page says Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. And then it says costume design.
It doesn't say costume design.
It says costume design.
I read it as Q-stume design.
Program.
It's C-U-S-T-U-M-E. It's not spelled right.
It's before the days of spell check.
Yeah, and here's the thing. This movie is in public domain. So you can find it on YouTube. We found it on Amazon Prime. You can get it lots of different places. My brother has it on DVD, for freak's sake. And it's the kind of low... It's the quality level that you'd expect.
They don't have budget. They didn't have a budget for spell checker. Let's just be honest about that.
Yeah. Somebody made these credits. They weren't like, we're going to hire in. You'll see like a credit company in a lot of movie credits, because I'm like one of the 11% who sits through like the entire credits, because that's somebody's kid up there, right? Mm-hmm. So like a lot of times it'll be like, you know, like gaff number 47's assistant to the Ireland production of the something, something, something. They didn't have that for this. There was no credit company listed.
Yeah.
And it was kind of endearing, but Q-stume. And God bless that Q-stume designer, because they lived up to that spelling.
Mm-hmm.
Very enjoyable Q-stumes in this movie.
For real. Okay. So we've had our title sequence. We've had our song. And we just can't get enough of that. But you know what we do need? We need to pull into Exposition Station.
Woo, woo!
Because, of course, we're going to cut to a newscaster.
Easiest way to go ahead and provide exposition in the 1960s.
True story.
Oh, do you know the name of the station that he's on?
I noticed it on second viewing, and yeah. I hate it.
KID TV.
Oh, kid TV.
Breaking news, bad jokes.
Oh, yeah. We're going to bring you this first ever journey to the North Pole, guys.
We got a guy up there who's just like trying to do improv.
Yeah. Yeah, what was that dinner joke about? Yeah. Like, they're all frozen dinners to us by the time they get to us.
We're off so far up that the only direction you can go is south.
Knock, 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 knock.
Oh, and this guy in like a fur jacket. Like, okay. I'm sorry. But like, I always assumed that Santa had his shop at the North Pole because it was the furthest away and nobody could bug him while he was working all the time, right? So why does it have a label outside that says Santa's workshop, like to make him super easy to find?
Don't know.
Okay. Crappy observation one. Me winning. Awesome.
Well, I think it's just kind of like an easy way to point and be like, oh, by the way, that's what this thing is. And that's kind of a theme in the movie, you know, say something and then state the obvious.
They do that like again and again. They'll say a thing and then they do the thing. And then they say a thing. There's like no subtlety whatsoever. I mean, lots of times children's products is it's shown with somebody almost about 2 years older playing with the product than the demographic they're going for, if that makes sense. Have you ever noticed this? So when I was little and I would like want to go to Claire's, like there were like 15-year-old girls like getting earrings and shit in the advertisements. But I was like 10 or 11 wanting to go there and get those things. And so when I look at this movie and the kids are 10 and 8, I think, oh, they're aiming at like a seven or a 9 year old, something like that.
Yeah, Amazon had said it was like a seven, ages seven and up.
Just as to show you, I know how development works. So we're watching this exhibition, like the Santa Claus, he's a real guy and we've acknowledged him in this canon. And like they pan past a statue that looks incredibly like a dog. And if you watch this, please laugh at that for me, because I'm a child, not a 7 to 9 year old child, but like I am immature. And it goes to some little green children just sitting there.
Right. It did feel like a pretty legit reveal from what I could see, because I was like, oh, OK, so this is a station that's specifically geared towards kids. We're probably not going to see, you know, Earth kids. And I mean, Santa Claus conquers the Martians. It doesn't necessarily give you any idea if they're going to be like, are there going to be Martian children or?
Yeah. And I appreciate that they didn't hold back. Like I didn't have to like when you have to wait halfway through a movie to get to the meat, like where are my Martians at?
Right.
And there's a lot of waiting in this film otherwise. So the fact that it was just like, and we're children and we're green and we're sitting here with like these weird helmets on our head and our outfits match our skin. Like, who needs contrast? Green.
Green, green, green.
All the way down.
Sparkle.
There's so much green glitter in this. It stole my heart, the green glitter. It must have been a quarter of the budget. Right. It really had to.
Yeah. And so they then go back into the news broadcast with the guy talking to Santa and going in with the elves and everything.
Where my notes say, cue oppression of actors with dwarfism and children. Because that's how it was. Like they had a handful of persons who are affected by dwarfism. And then they had like a bunch of children in the background dressed the same, but they're like back.
Yeah.
And I can't help but look for that in these kinds of films. And I know it's wrong. It's probably, I think it's born of Wizard of Oz, though.
I'm glad that you do, because it's not something that I always look for. So I'm glad when people do point it out, you know.
I here's the thing. I think people should get work. I just don't think that persons with dwarfism should always have to play like an elf or a munchkin or something. No, I was about to say diminutive, but like, you know what I mean? Like something lesser than a character who is more than just a gimmick. You know?
Right. Like they're not being hired specifically for what their body type is.
Yes. And we have seen leaps from that, especially with actors like Peter Dinklage or Warwick Davis. They have, through their work, been like catapulted beyond this physical appearance. And their acting chops have been shown again and again, like amazingly so. But like we got some short guys who are like, what are you doing? I'm making toys for Santa. And here's my hat and my jingle toes. And
why are you in this movie? Because it was either this or porn.
I mean, pretty accurate.
You're not wrong, but I'm
very accurate. In
I don't
fact.
Want it to be right, but you're not wrong.
It's sad how accurate that is.
Yeah. They come up to the one named Winky. He needed an elf name. It's not like they're gonna be like, and here's Carlos, he's been with us for 27 years, he's an amazing QDM expert on the making of
In our remake, I want them to have real, like, just actual names, not like elf names, you know, but like the elves, which wouldn't necessarily be played by, you know, any specific kind of person, but just like, you know, it would be like, you just, this is the head of toy development, Carlos.
Yeah.
Why not?
I would like that. I mean, and I don't know if I feel like this is, I like that there's a mild amount of diversity as opposed to like the modern Willy Wonka where they just had Deep Roy do everything. Mm-hmm. Like, was that charming? I don't know. I certainly love Deep Roy, and I feel like he delivered an amazing performance as every single Oompa Loompa in the modern Willy Wonka. But like, I mean, is that better than hiring a diverse cast of multi-talented individuals? Because there has to be a large collection of people who would like to perform those roles. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But like, Winky has made a Martian toy that they kind of gloss over.
An accurate Martian toy.
It is a little green man, Ken doll sized, that's painted green, and it looks exactly like the Martians depicted, and they never mention it again. He thinks a Martian would look like, and they set it down, and it's never referenced. Like, I don't know. I just feel like it was too good to throw away, and it was just tossed aside.
Also, the rocket that he was making before that ran on real rocket fuel, according to Santa. And I want to just know, how realistic is it that a child would be able to go out and get more rocket fuel for this toy?
That's how Santa makes his money.
Or maybe it comes with a limited supply of rocket fuel, because if the rocket goes up, is it going to break Earth's atmosphere and then come back down? Or is it going to stay up there? So basically, you make the toy, you provide enough rocket fuel for it to get out into orbit, and then when it gets up there, the kids are crying because they want another toy.
It's like razors and razor blades.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta keep buying over and over.
Right.
All right. That's market sustainability in that toy business.
Also, I noted that Santa had like actual smoke coming out of his pipe.
Right. Tobacco on camera. Not really common in mm-hmm. this era. So Martha Claus comes out, right?
Martha Claus?
I believe Santa's wife's name is Martha. They don't say it in the movie.
Oh, just like culturally?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're just going to let me get away with it without fact-checking me? Sean Facts. Shock Talk. You can fix me on that one. That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. I'm pretty sure it's Martha, though.
Right.
Okay. Do you feel bad about that character? Because she's just this kind of complainy wife who is like, oh, a TV camera.
Yeah. Like, she's all coming out being like, you guys are lazy and there's work to be done. And then she's like, oh, a camera.
My hair's a mess, except it's like the most perfectly coiffed silver wig you've ever seen in your entire life.
I kind of like roll my eyes every time someone's just sort of like, oh, my house is a mess. And I'm like, no, as a cleaner, it isn't a mess. Stop it.
As a person with a messy house, it is a problem. I do feel bad about it. But I also know, as a former coworker of yours, mm-hmm. we have seen worse. You didn't go on that job. But once we went to this like college guy's frat house to clean it, and we got paid in $5 bills. Yeah. And I had to like dust around a bong and a blow up doll. So like,
because you don't move those things, because you don't need your fingerprints on them.
I really don't, especially at that time, mm-hmm. like a decade and a half more ago. Like, yeah, no, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm good. Women on TV, eye roll. Winky, wowie, wow, wow. Mm-hmm. Martian toy. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then from there, they kind of like go back over to the Martian house where the kids are just sitting in front of the TV, and then it like goes over to like this guy who's complaining about like
the kids. There's something wrong with the children,
right? What's going on with the children? They're just sitting there listening to those Earth programs. He specifically calls it programs.
Wait. Do we go? Oh no!
Did I?
You know, we skipped only a little bit because it's super gross. The tickle ray. So this guy sleeping on the floor, his name is Droppo.
Did I skip that? Did I skip Droppo?
Because my notes go, Winky, the fountain is great on the Martian interior, because they have like water fountains everywhere.
Okay.
And then I wrote Tickle Ray Orgasmo. Do you remember Orgasmo? It's the South Park guys. It's what's his face and the other guy?
Butters?
No, it's like Matt Smith and
Trey Parker.
Oh, okay. They had a movie called Orgasmo.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, did you miss that?
Yeah.
Yeah. A superhero is born when he creates a gun that will cause you to spontaneously orgasm.
That could be very effective.
One, yes. Two, this movie. So when he's just like, get up, you lazy thing. And then he shoots him. And he's like, oh, oh, oh. I'm like, ew. Ew. Ew.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that was so this is when we were introduced to the father, Kimar, and the guy who's like their house servant.
Yeah,
Troppo?
I think. Yeah. But we don't know. He could just be a slave.
Mm hmm. Yeah. And I mean, with the way that he acts, you could very easily, it kind of makes you wonder, like, if this is a slave, one, if he seems like very absent-minded, he seems like he's not really interested. He's like, oh, I was just practicing how to sleep because I forgot, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, like, I haven't slept in a couple nights and I was just practicing. I wasn't sleeping under the table.
Right. He was just like sleeping on the floor, and that's when like the guy like shoots at him with a gun.
Yeah, it's the dad? Is it the dad?
Yeah, that's the dad.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. And then he like pulls up his antenna so that way he gets a better reception. And it's like, it's a really weird moment that makes you wonder, like, why is this guy? Because like, okay, here's my theory as far as like the people who wrote the movie in our actual world, taking it outside of the movie itself.
Do it.
Droppo reminds me of Mayberry, Don Knotts.
Yeah,
Don
yeah.
Knotts' character in
this doofy guy, yeah, who has a heart of gold, but he's always like jacking, yeah, things up.
Yeah. And he's kind of, you know, idiotic and moronic and everything.
Mm.
And so that's what I think they were going for, is like, this is a silly character that the kids will relate to and he's going to be the fun one. And but like in the internal logic of the movie, it's like, what is actually going on here? Because like having someone like this, you know, kind of be your house servant, and we know it because of the fact that later on he's like turning the knobs and everything, you know, saying that he's doing vacuuming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's obviously a servant in the house. We don't know what Martian politics look like, but it certainly doesn't look good from my perspective.
Right.
Maybe some green face going on here.
Do you want to talk about the makeup for a second?
Sure. So all of the Martians are decked out in green. They have these helmets on their heads, very similar to the doll that Winky put together. They have like a golden tube going from like the side up to the top. They also have like this like, it looks like the front of a VR headset covered in green glitter.
100%. And these masks, they never pull down. They're never over their faces. They only have them on their foreheads. So my theory, they have another eyeball in there, which is why they clink foreheads to kiss.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just like, they're hiding their third eye, and it's super creepy.
Yeah.
They look a lot like the Great Gazoo from...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
From Flintstones.
From Flintstones.
Yeah, 100%.
It makes sense. I mean, wasn't the Flintstones before this?
Yeah, I think the Flintstones are the 50s.
Yeah.
Gazoo first appeared on the show on October 29th, 1965.
Well, that's after this. What? We all, as a culture, collectively decided that they should have green helmets with the visor that they never use.
Maybe this movie has a lot more cultural influence than we want to really recognize.
Lady Momar came back from the pill center, and now she's talking to Dad.
Before she comes back, the dad goes in there, and he says to their kids, you need to stop watching that video. And then his daughter turns to him and says, must we go to sleep, father? Like every normal kid would ever
does
say.
Does he put them to bed? Right,
he does, yeah, oh, that's when he does the sleep spray, because then Lady Momar comes in. That's when Droppo's doing the vacuuming, and she pulls out the pills of food. And
I brought them things because they're not eating.
And then the dad, Kimar, comes in. He's just like, I had to use the sleep spray on them again.
I love their little beds that are like a hammock that like is like a free-flowing bed. Did you notice their pillows are foam bricks,
mm-hmm,
that are like squared? And then they get, there's a little mini animation of them getting spritzed with something and they're just unconscious, which I would sign up for 100%. As a person who has trouble sleeping, like,
Yeah.
If I had a switch and I could just be like, for the next 8 hours, I will be inert. Tink. Done.
See, and I would probably do that, but with food. Because, like, I don't want to have to, like, bother with, you know, trying to figure out what I'm supposed to eat and whether or not it's... healthy.
I just like the idea that the things we want to appropriate from this fictitious Martian culture is like, I want a better sleep schedule and you want better eating habits. Like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Take it.
Yeah.
Just let it be a thing.
I would go for this just because it would mean I would never have to see another MyPillow commercial on TV.
Something's happening to the children of Mars.
I know. They're just constantly staring at these Earth programs.
You should go to the forest.
Oh, yeah, and see the old ancient one.
And he calls everybody on his belt. They have these little knobby belts, and like they pause and like look off to the side, and then they turn their little knobs, and they're like, come in. We're meeting at such and such a place. Okay, yes. And then, yeah. And then like the one last guy's like, yeah, fine. You know it's right. And then they go off into the forest to see Cho-Chim.
Yeah.
Cho-Chim, you say? We've never mentioned anybody else's name. There's Garmir and Flip-Flop and Nim-Nom and Clip-Clop and Voldair and Momar and Momi and...
Dropo.
Dropo. Dorpo? Dropo. The names! I get that you're doing spacey names, but remember, we're really going to reference the Earth Girls Are Easy episode a lot for this, but like... Flip Flop, Nim Nam, and Dip Dop. You know what I'm talking about. From that one, Dip Zorp, Noop Noop, Bebo, Wim Wham, Zip Zap. When the wife goes, you should go to the forest, he goes, okay. Santa baby, I forgot to mention one little thing.
Food pills?
And I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so give me a little sleep spray tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree.
Do we want to talk about Momar's pointed bra?
No. But she does. She has like a super pointed bra, all of 50s style. Like, come on, Mars, catch up. We have boobs now. They're boob shaped. But the thing I wanted to bring up about the makeup was they have grease paint on.
Okay.
And we used to do makeup and drama. So grease paint is a very common stage makeup. But for complexing somebody with a very dark color, you're going to need to use a ton of it. And it looks like they did, because everyone from Mars is like slick with paint, right? But as you watch the film, you'll notice that the paint is inconsistent. And I think it's interesting because with full green body makeup like we do now, like I'm thinking of Guardians of the Galaxy,
Gamora,
they sprayed with the airbrush, and you get a lot more even coverage, you know, like, and so like I appreciate that advancement, because a full coated person has, I think, a better visual appeal than somebody who's just kind of like, so they ended up like greasing these people over. But then I think to try to make it look like natural skin, they'd put on like these really weird, almost like a beauty mark, almost like a mole. So every once in a while, they'll just have like a black spot somewhere. And I would like stare really hard to see if like that was intentional. And I still don't know. But I think they had a tremendous effort, like especially with all of that early 60s body hair.
They worked the color into the body hair.
Yeah, somebody rubbed that man with a sponge for several minutes. And every once in a while, you'll notice like somebody's done a lot of like working with their hands in the scene. And then all of the paint will have come off their hands. So they'll have like a flesh colored hand and like a green face. It's pretty entertaining. It's a pretty interesting like inconsistency to observe in this film, I would say.
So Pia Zadora, she is the young Martian girl. We'll get into her a little bit more, but she plays Gurmar. And she was also, since we were mentioning Earth Girls Are Easy, she was in a movie that's not Earth Girls Are Easy.
Oh man, that was the biggest can build up for nothing.
She was in a movie called Voyage of the Rock Aliens, where aliens land in a town and they search for the source of rock and roll. So she got typecast later in life. This was 1984 that she got into this role.
When did Troop Beverly Hills come out?
Troop Beverly Hills came out in 1989. She played herself in that.
I want to be famous enough to play myself in something.
Mm-hmm. Also, as far as a headcanon for our own show, she was Little Miss Muffet in Mother Goose's Rockin' Rhyme, which we have referenced in our Brave Little Toaster episode.
Man, I loved that show as a kid. I watched it every time it came on. So let's go to 800-year-old Cho-Chim.
So all of the Martians who were over the speaker with Kimar, they all kind of meet, and there's...
Wait, are you surprised it's a handful of men? No. Patriarchy reaches all the way to Mars?
But one of them is Voldar, who's like the antagonist of the movie. And they're just sort of like, you know, oh, all of our children are just, you know, there's something wrong with the children. And Cho-Chim has to, you know. And at some point, cannot remember what he says exactly, but
all they want to do, or all they're interested in, is meaningless Earth programs on the video. That's my favorite line from that scene.
Yeah, and Voldar's just very like, I don't see that there's any kind of a problem going on. Rah, 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 rah. We don't need to talk to Cho-Chum. Rah, 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 rah,
he's 800
rah.
Years old, but I don't need... Who wants to listen to... They're like, why wouldn't you listen to the logic of the wisdom of someone so old? And he's like, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Dude, Vlad, whatever.
Yeah.
Dude, he's just... I would say... Whatever the majority wants, he has to go against. Like, he's got a cognitive dissident that is like, no. Like, whereas most of the time we love characters who are like, okay. Like, he's like, no. No.
Maybe this is one of the red Martians originally that you're speaking of that was in opposition of the other
Yeah,
Martians.
He's definitely one of those birds with a star on them in that Dr. Seuss book from our childhood.
He feels like he's got to stick up his ass when it comes to the leader of the world, who is Kemar, because he seems very like everything that Kemar says, he has to go against.
Well, and Kemar's got that nice house with all those fountains and those weirdly shaped drawers with the penis statue and all that. But he lives in a cave or something, kind of. Well, I think so.
Probably.
I fully believe he lives in that cave that we're about to come to in like part 5 of this episode.
Right. So Cho-Chum appear. Oh, like Kemar's like, I command you to appear, Cho-Chum. And then there's like, you know, smoke, and then dude appears. And they're like, something is wrong with our children. Tell us what we must do.
And that's when they say the meaningless programs on the video.
Right.
And he's just like, Cho-Chum is like, he's like this the entire time. He's like, what month is it? And what's his face is all like, it's Flurby Derp. And he's like, not
here on Earth, dummy.
He's like, oh yes, it's December. It's Christmas time.
Yeah, and he goes into this monologue about how, you know, Martian children are only children in their bodies. Their minds are the minds of adults, and they're sad because they don't have Christmas or Santa.
We feed their brains electronically so that by the time they can walk, they're adults and they need to play. He delivers the thesis, spoilers, of the entire film in this one speech. And he's like, they need to be children. They need a Santa.
Beautiful delivery, by the way.
It's paramountly stupid. I've watched it a few times and I'm just like, Cho-Chim.
I'm referring to your delivery, of course.
Like, my abject mockery of this pretty like intentional like speech. Jen has some wonderful thoughts, I think, on this area, if I'm remembering right.
Okay, number one, this guy is the old white bearded guy
he's
of
the
their
sensei,
planet.
The sensei.
He's like 800 years old. He's got centuries of knowledge, and he's not going to play Santa for everybody? That's number one.
No, he's Yoda.
Can't Yoda be Santa in today's Star Wars woke culture?
Yeah, no, however you identify, I support that.
Okay. So, yeah, he does remind me of the guy that asked three questions in
yes!
Monty Python.
Yes. I love that. That when you made that joke, when you're just like, answer me these questions three. I was like,
what is your quest?
wait. When did that movie come out?
It was after this one.
Okay. I know we're canceling John Cleese for backing up J.K. Rowling and being like a transphobic piece of crap, right? But like, that was mint. Like the bridge guy. Some call me Cho-Chim.
Okay, and number two, he's saying that kids are growing up while they're still in their young bodies, and I have a logical scientific explanation for this. It's something like 685 days in a Mars year, so you could be 10 years old, but you're really like 20 years old.
Yeah.
So all of these boomers are just really angry that millennials have too much technology?
Okay. I agree with that, but what I think Jen is saying is that when the two boys are like, I'm 10, I'm 10 too, except 10 too is 20. Mm-hmm. My sister's 8, I'm 8 too. Honey, you're 16. And those are very different places to be.
Right.
Go take your internet pills and go to sleep with your sprays of whatever.
Yeah, this whole scene just made me think of, damn it, technology, we created you to make our lives more convenient. How could you betray us?
Okay, so like with a fart, Cho Chim like disappears in a cloud of smoke, right? Gone. He's like has spoken, he's done, he's gone.
Right.
And then Vlad baby. The Vladster. Like Vlad is like Chad in Martian or whatever. He's all like he says something like
are we talking about Voldar?
Yeah.
Vlad. Oh, he's called Vlad Voldar.
Voldar. I like Vlad. I really do like Vlad.
Voldar. Vold is Chad for Martian. It was funny. Okay. He's just like, who wants to help our children laughing and playing and running underfoot? Like,
that's going to make our lives very inconvenient.
Yeah. And I get that kids are hard and it's hard to engage with kids, but like engaging them when they're happy and interested in something, laughing and playing, like that's the most important time to engage with a child, because if you only engage with them when they're acting a little guess how they're going to get your attention?
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to have shitty sullen children.
You got house slaves. Let your kids be kids.
You're not wrong, but that's not right.
This is where they start executing the plan to kidnap a Santa Claus.
Yes, I have titled this portion, Welp, Let's Steal Santa.
It just made me think of Nightmare Before Christmas.
It is the exact same plot as Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right.
Which would make Droppo the Pumpkin King.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I could see that without giving away any spoilers.
You know what the mom does remind me of? Patch's McGirlfriend face from...
Sally?
Yeah.
I don't know.
She just looks like her.
Okay. So they board onto a ship and head for Earth to find this Santa Claus.
Oh.
Even though Voldaire is just sort of like, I'm against this plan.
They cut to the news doing exhibition again, and they're like, the spaceship, or whatever it is, in space, out in our thing.
Yeah.
Like, whatever it is.
Yeah, and they're inside the ship. They're kind of, you know, like trying to not get detected by Earth's radar. And so it doesn't work at first. And then when they go to check on the radar area, they open it up.
Do you remember the phrase they say?
No.
It's got a slight case of Dorpo. Yeah, it's a bet. Like some of the lines are so good, but like, yeah. Like... imagine everything around them is made out of cardboard and like bicycle reflectors and like your basic on and off light switches that they're often manipulating by hand, and they're all green.
Yeah.
And there's no, did you notice there's no shaky cam?
There are moments where they kind of like where the actors shake.
Yeah, but they're like the camera does not shake at all.
That camera,
and I'm
doesn't
so
shake.
Used to not. I'm so used to it being a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really. Yeah. Anyways,
so they go to open up the radar, and apparently the reason why the radar wasn't working was because Dorpo was there. Droppo. And so he gets out, and he was like, "Oh, I was just gonna, you know, leave you a goodbye message," and then I ended up just falling asleep or something like that.
Yeah, but here's okay. So we have talked about this a little bit, but how long do you think this movie would be? Okay, it's a runtime of an hour and 21 minutes and some seconds. How long do you think this movie would be without stock footage? And I would like us to all give our answers.
I mean, my original joke with that this movie was 40% stock footage.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, let's see, what would that be? 8 multiplied by 4 is 32 minus 80. That would be 64 minutes. I think I did the math right.
I love that you did the math at all. Jen, how long do you think this movie would be without stock footage?
Well, there would only be a movie on Mars. It seems like every... except for the scene with the kids, there's really not much going on Earth. And
oh, North Pole-ish.
Yeah, North Pole. And then the kids who get, something happens to the kids. I don't want to spoil too much.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And that's about it. Like, every military scene that you see is probably stock footage.
Yeah.
And in one place, we see a plane getting refueled, and that exact same stock footage is used
in Stanley Kubrick's
Dr. Strangelove.
There you go. You can say the whole thing now. I didn't mean to interrupt.
I was very off with that percentage, by the way. It's actually, I believe that there is only 48 minutes, Not 64. Not even, it wasn't even close. It wasn't even close, y'all.
No, I appreciate an attempt. That still works the brain muscles. You're fine. It's fine. So how long do you think the film would be? Including what is it decidedly a fantastic stock footage bit that Stanley Kubrick liked in Dr. Strangelove?
All 65 minutes, maybe.
I'm going to be a little more generous than y'all. I'm going to say that this movie would be 70 minutes long without all the stock footage.
Is that because you have the actual fact in front of you?
I do not have the actual fact. This is just me yelling at my notes.
Okay.
I just wanted to know.
Okay.
If someone's nerd enough to go back and let us know how many moments of military film there is and subtract that from the total running time of the movie, that's cool. But we want you to know you can be our fans without having to do that.
Yeah, we still love you even if you don't.
Totally being a plotter without having to go into that deep, dark hole of subtracting time out of a 1964 movie.
Would that be like a... you could leave this out if you want to, but could you imagine us asking Shock Talk to do that for us? Like, what kind of move would that be? To be like, Sean, could you go see... I would never, but oh my God, that'd be so funny. Okay.
Back to the plot.
Hey, let's cut to a field with like a tree. And
No. This is before, but before. So in the midst of all of the stock footage that goes on, they're looking through into the city. They're looking down on Earth, trying to find Santa Claus. And they're like, at one point, Voldar's like, trying to find Santa Claus. That's like trying to find a needle in a haystack. Oh, wait, I see him. And I'm just... This is one of those instances where it's like, you know, we're going to talk about how, you know, something
that's
is impossible. Or something is or someone is doing that or should be doing that. And then it's going to happen.
Yes, they do that frequently. They do also, I believe, in this scene, observe that like they call this a city. We could blow it up with one of our... We can never catch the word that they say, even though we've all... It's like a something ray.
Keurig.
A Keurig ray.
It sounds like he's saying Keurig. I know he's not, but I like to think that Martians would destroy Earth with a Keurig.
Yeah. Hold on. I got to turn it on. Let it warm up.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I got to put the pod in, man. Oh, who leaves the former Keurig death ray pod in there? Holes, and then they put in the new one and they're like,
no, it's not filled up with water.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, okay, life pro tip, guys. If you share a Keurig with people, take the pod out whenever you're done getting your coffee. You're standing there anyway. Mm-hmm. And if you notice the water's down, fill it up. Leave it like you want to find it, you know?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Part one of our walkthrough of 1964's Santa Claus Conquers the Martians has completed a plotter. But we still have plenty of jolly fun left in this children's science fiction so bad it's good classic. Looking for even more stocking stuffers before Saint Nick makes a comeback? Book Retorts also loves discussing weird and wild media, and just released their episode on the Sci-Fi Channel original, Snowmageddon. And Fantasy Reboot Podcast recasts and imagines new actors in classic films, and just released their episode discussing Die Hard. Check out this episode's description for links to these shows. Hey, this is your audio engineer and shameless holiday pledge plugger, Jen. Did you know that for $1 per month, you can become an official applauder through Patreon? You'll get access to our unbleeped commercial-free episodes, as well as upcoming exclusive content in 2021. It's an amazing way to show your support for us, and we'll even mention you on a future episode of Shock Talk. Visit patreon.com/shockedandapplaud or click the heart-shaped link at the top of shockedandapplaud.com. We'll be back in 1 week for part two of our review of this, well, it's a movie. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.